Welcome to Wellness Notes on Radio St. Pete, hosted by myself, Desiree Valario. 40 minutes dedicated to whole person health affecting the physical, mental, social, and financial well-being of our community. Welcome to our guest today, Wendy Wesley. Wendy is a registered and licensed dietitian and nutritionist who works to improve the health of our community. She's a food policy activist who writes, speaks, and podcasts. I didn't know that was a verb. About chronic disease, nutrition insecurity, and food literacy to local and statewide audiences. She is the author of Good Enough in the Kitchen, Believing in Your Cooking for Better Health, A Fatter Wallet, and a Big Environmental Impact. So Wendy is here today to talk with us about food literacy. Welcome, Wendy.
Thank you for having me today.
Thank you for being here. So for the audience, what is food literacy? What does that mean?
You know, that is teaching and empowering people to understand basic nutrients, helping them avoid processed food and choose nutrient-dense whole foods. And then what do you do with it? How do you buy it? How do you save money while buying it? How do you read labels and understand food labels? And then how to cook, what to do with it in the kitchen. So we have amazing food programs in our community, like Feeding Tampa Bay and the St. Pete Free Clinic and Daystar. But I believe a piece that's missing is the next wave of food is really teaching people what to do with it when they receive it. Either they receive it from a food bank or when they buy it in the grocery store.
You know, that makes sense. I remember the other day you were saying that people come and they get this food that is provided through a food bank or through something like Feeding Tampa Bay, and they may not even know what some of these things are. You know, I think I've cooked turnips once in my life, and I might not even be able to point it out in the grocery store. So it makes sense to me that people do need to be educated about this food that they're receiving. What is it, and how do they prepare it? And especially, how do they prepare it in a way that's healthy and tastes good for them? Otherwise, they're not going to do it, right? So
I've seen it with my own eyes, people receiving food from a food bank and then going around to the back of the food bank and throwing away produce in a dumpster. So I've seen that with my own eyes. I've also interacted with people at food banks who say, don't give me this food because I don't know what to do with it. So they have actually rejected food that was given to them because they didn't have the knowledge of how to get it home and prepare it and serve it.
And, you know, these programs are so fantastic, right? And everyone thinks that it's a positive thing, and it is. But this is a topic that I know I didn't even think about it until you brought it up to me. And it really is a big deal, you know, to be giving away this food and feeling like you're doing this great thing. And then the folks on the other end, and some of them may even feel embarrassed. They don't even want to say that they don't know what it is or that they don't know what to do with it. So why does it matter to a community food literacy, Wendy?
When we are always looking to eliminate or reduce food waste. So one way to do that is to teach people how to cook and enjoy the food without it going into the dumpster or the landfill. So it's one way is to eliminate food waste, which has a big environmental impact. Our what we call our hottest garbage, the garbage that produces the most CO2, is food. So when food goes into the garbage or the landfill, it produces the most CO2 gas. as it decomposes. So that's the what we call the hottest garbage. So eliminating food waste has a major environmental impact.
Got it. Yeah, I know that even in my own kitchen, well, I'm in a condo now, but even when I was composting, you learn about that heat and what happens when the food starts to deteriorate and decompose. And even in my kitchen now, with the garbage, you know, I use a lot of produce, and you know, I throw my coffee grounds in there and all this, and it gets hot in that garbage pail. So, Wendy, can you give us some examples of food literacy in our community?
I would like for more nonprofits to include food literacy in their programming. And there are a lot of grants out there through the USDA and other funders that will support these programs to teach people what to do with the food when they receive it from food banks. Also, just general nutrition education programs. Insurance doesn't really cover nutrition education and chronic disease management with food the way they cover pharmaceuticals or the way they will pay for treatment or surgeries. So we have misdirected priorities when it comes to insurance. So getting insurance providers to believe in prevention nutrition rather than management, disease management. So disease prevention rather than disease management. So, and that is often done with health coaches like you, cooking coaches, and registered dietitians, nutritionists, who can help get the information and the education out to people. So I would say nonprofits availing themselves of funding and then finding those experts in the community and paying those experts in the community to give that education.
So as of today, what can you give some specific examples of some of the things that you're actively working on in regard to food literacy? Even if it is, like you mentioned, pursuing grants and things.
I'm asked often by churches and schools to come in and do free nutrition education. And I almost always say yes to a church or a school or a small nonprofit because I believe in this so much. And if they don't have their resources to pay, then I come in often and do free education for those small organizations and nonprofits. So the answer is yes. And I'm hoping as the pandemic lifts and we can do more face-to-face, I can get out there more. In fact, I'm talking to Daystar right now about coming out when they have when they're giving away food and doing on-site cooking and label reading education with the folks that come and pick up the food. So we've been limited because of the pandemic, but it looks like those opportunities are going to open up for the remainder of 2020. I'm really looking forward to that.
That's fantastic. So when we ask a guest to come onto the show, we also ask them to tell us who their local favorite musician or band is. And Wendy has selected the Al Downing Tampa Bay Jazz Association. And so I've invited Eric Hempel of the Al Downing Tampa Bay Jazz Association to join us. And Eric is an artist and producer, and he's based in Tampa Bay. He's a multi-instrumentalist, say that fast, with a specialty in upright bass, which is near and dear to my heart because my grandfather played the upright bass. He's played venues such as the Apollo Theater in Harlem, and he shared the stage with Chicago, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Marcus Miller, and more. He's also one of the producers of the Al Downing Tampa Bay Jazz Association show, the Monday Night Jazz Hour, which is featured right here on Radio St. Pete, 6 p.m., and hosted by Dwayne White. Eric, did Wendy spark any comments or questions for you regarding food literacy?
Well, Yeah, well, I actually really enjoyed everything that Wendy had to say. And I was really interested in how much do you think, when we talk about food literacy and health and nutrition, how important do you think it is, if it is at all, to kind of grow your own produce and your own food as much as possible?
I think that the pandemic has sent a lot of people into their or to into their yards, into their gardens to start growing their own food. Gardening is this interesting whole nutrition or whole health kind of a project, because it's exercise, it's growing your own food and getting that food into your belly and the belly of your family. And it's also connecting people. So gardening can be a very social activity, which alleviates loneliness, which loneliness is a driver of chronic disease. So I find that that gardening can be this whole cycle health activity. And interestingly, St. Petersburg just passed an ordinance that allows residents to sell what they grow in their front, side, and backyards.
Cool.
So I didn't realize that you couldn't, but now 36 times a year over a weekend, you can sell what you grow from from a table you set up in your driveway. You can also set up shop. You can open the trunk of your car or the back of your pickup truck and sell what you grow in a vacant lot in St. Petersburg. So we have community gardens, we have urban farms, and now we have citizens who can grow and sell what or who can sell what they grow, which is a major step forward for St. Pete. So good on St. Pete.
That's so cool. Well, you just talked about different ways we can grow and produce food. I've been hearing a lot about aquaponics, and I don't know I don't know too much about it per se, but how does that correlate with everything you just talked about?
Honestly, I don't know much about aquaponics. I know there are a couple of farms locally. They've set up in old storage containers or shipping containers, and they grow that way. And one of them is Brick Street Farms. I'm hoping to take a tour and see what they're doing. And they're selling to local restaurants what they grow in these overseas shipping containers. It sounds like a really cool idea.
Wow.
But there's this Saturday is a tour of urban farms and gardens. So it's being put on by the Suncoast Sierra Club, and it's kind of open house style. Wear masks and go and see what people are doing. It's also a way to promote this new St. Pete ordinance, this gardening ordinance that allows people to sell what they grow in their yards.
That's so cool. And it just seems like it's so fun listening to you talk, Wendy, because you have so much well, obviously you have so much passion about all of this. And I think it's so important. And I think that especially in America, we tend to not pay attention to what we eat or what we consume and how that affects us, And I wanted to see what really got you interested in all this. I'm just kind of curious on that because you have so much knowledge. And where did this all really start from you?
I've cooked since I was 10. Cooking's always been a thing. I've always been interested in food, but it kind of started when I was pregnant and I went to childbirth classes at the local hospital. And they always say, don't eat during labor. You've heard that. Don't eat during labor. And the nurse at the hospital said, by the way, eat during labor. Labor is work, and work requires energy, and energy is food. So that kind of sent me down this rabbit hole of, well, what do you eat during labor? What's a good food? And so that really got that experience got me going. And then, of course, I had my son and was nursing. And so what is lactation nutrition? What is toddler nutrition? What is, so that's kind of got me going, was my own experience becoming a mother.
Yeah, that's so cool. And it's interesting because good food definitely makes a difference. Back when I was before I graduated high school and I was still with my parents, it was interesting because my mom had in particular really because my brother had all these allergies and he was having all these health issues and they attributed them to food allergies in particular. So she became a nut in a good way about making sure we had all organic food and everything. And honestly, not only did it taste better, but I just felt better. And I'm on that whole, you know, path now too, is it's, you almost just feel healthier all around, you know. I think it's, it really makes a difference. And what you say is, you're telling me all this stuff, I'm like, yes, that's so true. You know, like that, I definitely feel that.
Yeah. And I've always had a desire to do some kind of social work. So I chose food as my social work. Regardless of income, you should have access to nutrient dense foods and education. And so, I chose food and nutrition as my social work. And so I feel passionately that all people, regardless of income, regardless of where they live, should have access to nutrient dense foods and education.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's amazing. Yeah.
So Wendy, you said that motherhood put you on this path. It wasn't just a piece of cake to become a registered dietitian. Can you speak a little bit to, you know, what you had to do to get that title?
Organic chemistry, biochemistry, microbiology, a lot of anatomy, physiology, a lot of cell biology, education. And then there's a lot of social work education, motivational interviewing. It's a Bachelor of Science and then moving on to a Master's in Nutrition and then a year-long internship that includes community nutrition, school nutrition, of course, and then clinical hospital nutrition. So I worked for many years at a hospital, and that's where I really kind of got going on food activism, because my patients over and over and over again said, I know how to eat, but the food does not exist in my community. So I began writing articles and speaking publicly about how really St. Pete is the playing field, the nutrition playing field is not level in the city of St. Pete. We have areas of our city with 6 to 7 full service grocery stores within a 1 mile radius. And then we have these large swaths of our city with no full service grocery stores. So I kind of found my voice in activism, writing articles and speaking and creating awareness that the, like I said, the nutrition playing field in St. Pete is definitely not level.
And so that's a whole nother topic. I think it's often referred to as food insecurity. Is that correct?
Yes, people call it food insecurity. I'm trying to flip the script and call it nutrition insecurity. Food insecurity can be met by loading a community full of processed calories. Nutrition insecurity is met by loading a community full of nutrient-dense foods. So there's a distinction between food insecurity, which can be met by gas stations and dollar stores. That's calories. It's food, but it's calories. And then nutrition insecurity is met with nutrient-dense foods that are available through gardens, farms, and full-service grocery stores and food banks.
So we are coming to the end of our time, and I just wanted to ask Eric if he had any other questions or comments on food literacy.
Well, I guess the big thing is, Wendy, as I said, you are so amazing what you do. And I think it's so, so great. I did have one last question. And you talked about how you worked in a hospital for years. And my mother is actually a nurse. I wanted to see how is the nutrition in hospitals? You know, we talk about hospital food. Is it what's the state of that?
Well, hospital food is unfortunately a big tough nut to crack, just like school food is a big tough nut to crack. They're both institutions. They're both kind of set in their ways. Some communities do better with school nutrition. Some hospital systems do better with their food. Unfortunately, the hospital system where I work has a long way to go with food. And I worked with senior leadership there to try and clean up the food we offer the patients and the staff and the visitors. It's not just the patients, but it's also the people who come into our hospital as staff, as visitors, to set the right example. So often hospitals set a very, very poor example regarding nutrition because of cost, of convenience, and then the old standby fallback, that's what people like. And I think it's incumbent upon hospitals to set a very, very fine example for their staff, patients, and visitors.
That was a great question, Eric.
Thank you. Wendy is such a great speaker. I'm trying to get as much as I can out of her.
Well, we have come to the end of our time. This has been fantastic. Thank you both so much. I love talking about nutrition and feeling like I'm empowering people by sharing information. And you have shared a great deal of very valuable information. One of the other things that we do here on the show is we like to feature a song by the artist that was selected by our guest. And so we've picked, it's a song called 12's It, and it's written by Ellis Marsalis Jr. and performed by the Dwayne White Four, featuring Eric, our guest here, on bass, Trace Zakur, I hope I said that right, on tenor sax, and Joe Renda on drums, and of course, Dwayne White. And so we'll be playing that for you to take us out of the show. So thank you again so much for being here. Really appreciate your sharing the information with us.
Thank you for having me. And I'm a big fan of Al Downing. I love what you do locally. I love jazz. I've been listening to jazz since I was a teenager, finding it on WMNF and listening late at night. And recording what I liked on mixtapes. That's how old I am, mixtapes. But yeah, I've been what I call consuming jazz for, I don't know, 40 years. As you know, jazz is huge, it's gargantuan, and I'm still scratching the surface and learning more. So I'm so happy that you, of the work you do, I'm so excited about Al Downing and the work that you do.
Well, thank you so much for the support, and thank you for everything you do for the community, Wendy.
Thank you.
And you know what? Before we go, Eric, can you just tell us a little bit about Al Downing's Tampa Bay Jazz Association?
Yeah, of course. Well, I'm actually a beneficiary. They're all about spreading not only just jazz education, but just to younger people, but to people of all ages and all backgrounds and such. Jazz is, we talk about this, and not to be a cliche, but jazz is America's music. I mean, that's an art form that all popular music draws from, and it was created right here. And I think it's important for everyone to have at least a basic understanding and of jazz music. And they do, actually the reason I got into jazz was they came to my high school, Lakewood High School, many years ago. They did a jazz in the schools program where they had all these musicians come in and play and get all of these younger, because I was doing classical music at the time, all these younger musicians, you know, get them onto jazz. And it was such, specifically Dwayne White was the person that was there. And we formed a bond, and many years later, we've done lots of work. I play with them all the time, and we have the Monday Night Jazz Hour. But they do a lot of great work, such as providing college scholarships, which I was a beneficiary of for the youth, and putting on different concerts. I mean, the Monday Night Jazz Hour, which happens every Monday at 6 p.m., is a free live stream, providing some of the best entertainment from all over the Tampa Bay area, and even from the bringing in West Coast artists. We just had Scotty Wright come in and do a performance. So it's, they do a lot, and it's for free. They're all about spreading the knowledge and the understanding and the appreciation of our great musical art form in America, jazz.
That is fantastic. Thank you, Wendy, for bringing that project to our attention, the Al Downing Tampa Bay Jazz Association. And thank you again, both of you, for being here on the show, Wellness Notes. You've been listening to Wellness Notes on Radio St. Pete with me, Desiree Valario, 40 minutes dedicated to whole person health affecting our community.